Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. I'm so happy to have you back here for another episode where we get to explore with world thought leaders and experts on subjects such as human resources, leading, and most importantly, how to live the best version of your life. Now, this show would not be possible without our sponsors, the people at Markham Search LLC, who make every week's show possible. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States and have a variety of services ranging from temporary to executive search. So please do keep them in mind for all of your potential needs. Today we have with us Bruce Tolgan. Bruce is a best-selling author. He is an advisor to business leaders all over the world and is a sought-after keynote speaker since 1995. Tolgan has worked with tens of thousands of leaders and managers in hundreds of organizations, ranging from Aetna to Walmart and from the U.S. Army to YMCA. He lectures at the Yale Graduate School of Management, as well as other academic institutions. Tolgan's books include the updated and expanded edition of Not Everybody Gets a Trophy, sorry, Not Everyone Gets a Trophy, and the best-selling It's Okay to Be the Boss. He is the founder and chairman of Rainmaker Thinking, Inc. and lives in New Haven, Connecticut. Thanks so much for joining us today, Bruce.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Yes, I love this topic. As soon as I think we were talking offline about your amazing publicist, Tess, who sent us many wonderful guests over the years. And I immediately was taken by your topic of how do we become indispensable? I think that's a question that is not only timely for what we're going through right now with the pandemic, but I think it's timely for any point in our lives. Tell us a little bit about how that topic became something that you were passionate about and wanted to speak about.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me on. And we have been doing research on the front lines of the workplace for 27 years now, since 1993. And we do in-depth interviews with people in organizations of all shapes and sizes. And so we're always trying to stay tuned into what's on people's minds. Of course, it's a perennial issue. People want to be valuable. They want to be that indispensable go-to person, especially right now when people are they're worried about their livelihoods. And it's not just their health and well-being that people are worried about. But right now, as we're facing all kinds of economic uncertainty, people, they really want to be that indispensable go-to person. But when we were looking into this issue, what we were really trying to figure out was, how do you become that indispensable person without becoming overcommitted and finding yourself overwhelmed? You know, some people, the way they want to be indispensable is they say yes, 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 yes to everyone and everything. But of course, that's a rookie move. If you say yes, yes, yes to everyone and everything, pretty soon you succumb to overcommitment syndrome and pretty soon you can't do anything for anybody. So we're always looking at, you know, what's bothering people in the workplace? What are people struggling with? What people are really struggling with is they're facing so many factors outside their control, so much uncertainty. People find work is more and more demanding. They have to deal with more and more people. Everybody is your customer. Everybody's coming to you with requests. And if you want to be that indispensable go-to person, the question is, you know, how do you do that without drowning in overcommitment?
Yeah, I love this topic. It was something many years ago I was passionate about and used to do a lot of talks to law firms about, you know, there was a huge change and transition in law about 10 years ago where you had new type and you had all the traditional assistants who were worried about losing their jobs. And so I think the same is true for anybody out there. We're all always worried about being replaced by technology, by somebody with a brighter, sharper skill set. So how can we keep ourselves evergreen and, like you said, not overcommit ourselves?
Yeah, because look, so who is that indispensable go-to person? Is it the one who has the greatest technical skill? Well, sure, you have to be good at your job, but we've all known technical experts nobody wants to deal with, right? And so is it, you know, the person who works hardest? Well, of course, you know, you got to work hard. But if you work hard on the wrong stuff, or if you work hard at doing things the wrong way, you just get lots of the wrong stuff done or get stuff done wrong. So is it the person with the best attitude? Well, sure, you want somebody who's good to work with, but sometimes the one with the best attitude is the one who's most likely to overpromise. And when people overpromise and then they can't deliver, that's not somebody you want to go back to over and over again. So, you know, it's people who know how to show up. They know how to do great work and they know how to be great to work with, but they also know that you can't do everything for everyone. So you have to make really good decisions about when you say yes and how you say yes, but also when to say no.
I think that's such a valid point. And, you know, one of the topics that I often like to talk to people about is when we're in an office, there are all sorts of different types of jerks. You know, you have the emotional vampire, you have the gossip, you have the person who's the dictator sort of personality. And one of the employers who might be new in human resources or hiring think to themselves, oh, that's a great answer. If somebody says, yes, I'll do everything and I never say no, often that's a cliche weakness that you would hear in the recruiting world. And what I would always tell people is that is the biggest warning flag you're ever going to hear from somebody. Because if somebody says, I don't know how to say no, they're telling you right off the bat that they have porous boundaries. And I think what I'm hearing you say, Bruce, is that you want to find somebody who's that really in between. On the one hand, you have porous boundaries. On the other hand, you have rigid boundaries. And then somewhere in between, you have that person who's just the right amount of flexible and just the right amount of healthy boundaries when needed, that they can be counted on when need be, and also know when to pivot and delegate when necessary.
Yeah, look, sometimes no is the right answer. And, yes is where all the action is, right? Yes is how you form your opportunity to deliver tangible results. But you don't want to waste your yeses. Right. Yes is where all the action is. So you better not waste your yeses. And a good no is all about opportunity costs. It's all about freeing up time and energy and resources for a better yes. So look, right. You know, if you say yes, but you really can't do it, well, that's not going to go well. If you say yes, but you really are not allowed to do it, that's not going to go well. Even if you say yes and you really shouldn't do it because maybe it's not your specialty or you have other priorities, or maybe it's not a good idea, right? So you want to be somebody who other people respect your judgment because you make good decisions. And so when somebody comes to you with a request, right, that's not the key to being indispensable. The key to being indispensable is delivering for people. And if you want to deliver for people, you better be careful about when you say no and how you say yes.
I do have to pivot for one moment, Bruce, and address something that I can hear in our listeners' minds. I like to intuit and imagine, if I were a listener, what would I be thinking as Bruce is saying this? And I'm just envisioning somebody going into their boss's office or getting on a Zoom call tomorrow, and their boss says, hey, Bob, I have this project and it's due tomorrow. And they say, no. I was listening to Get Yourself the Job, and Jennifer was talking to Bruce Tolkien, and he said that I can say no to things. So I'm going to pause and pivot for one moment here and just say what I'm hearing Bruce say, and for any of you out there tuning in, viewing, listening, I think what Bruce is saying is that there's a tactful way to say yes and. It's one of my favorite games that I love to play is to say yes and. Like, for example, I would get many calls when I used to run a recruiting agency and people would say, are you a recruiting agency? Yes. And then they would say, can you help me find a job? I'd say yes. And we might not be the best resource for you because of the fact that we're very niche in what we do. Let me provide you with five other names. So I think perhaps taking the yes and approach, or just if you have any other suggestions, Bruce, of how to tactfully pivot towards a no and still maintain your job and be able to do all the other things we're intending people want to do.
Yeah, look, for starters, the best way to put yourself in a position to say no is to have a reputation for somebody who makes good decisions, to have a reputation as somebody who is aligned with your boss and your chain of command and priorities, to have a reputation as somebody who delivers. And so when you say no, people stop and think because of the reputation you have, because of the influence you have. So that's more of a long-term prospect, is having that track record that you want people to think, gee, you know, the last time Jennifer said no, that turned out to be the right thing. Good thing we didn't do that, right? But where you have to start is remembering it's not always up to you. And, you know, when your boss asks you to do something, well, good news, you don't have to make a decision because you're not in charge. The boss is. So I always tell people, you've got to start with your vertical anchor. You got to be really good at aligning with your boss. You've got to be really good at knowing where your boss is coming from, and where you're going. And look, you know, if your boss is not keeping really good track of your workload, of your available productive capacity, of your current priorities and marching orders, and your boss says, hey, you know, I need you to do this right now, it's a good thing to do to stop and tune in and say, hey, okay, so let me just make sure I understand, because I'm working on A, B, C, and D. So I want to make sure I understand, is this something that takes priority? Now, some boss will be like, oh, no, 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 no. Do A, B, C, and D first. This can wait, right? Or the boss might say, oh, you know, good thing you told me that. I'll have another resource work on this. Or they say, oh, no, A, B, C, and D are lower priorities. This takes priority. So look, if you're going to be in a position to be indispensable, that means the first person you got to manage every day is yourself. The second person you got to manage every day is your boss. And so, and then the third person is, you know, anybody who calls you the boss. And then fourth is everyone else, right? But there's a beauty to knowing what's not up to you. And once you know what's not up to you, you know, that's actually quite liberating. And it's no hard feelings. Somebody's got to be in charge, and it's not you. So, you know, you know, one of the chapters in the book actually is lead from wherever you are. But the rule in that book is you got to go vertical before you go sideways. So vertical, like that indispensable person, that one of the keys is having a regular structured dialogue with your boss so you're super clear on priorities, ground rules, marching orders. And look, sometimes the best thing you can do is remind your boss of the other things you're working on. So if you're not in regular dialogue with your boss, you should be. That's one of the ways to obviate that no. And you know, the poorly placed no. But good news, you know, if there's a chain of command, then you know when not to say no. And that is when you're getting marching orders from somebody who's in charge of you.
Exactly. And you hit on such a salient point right there, Bruce. What I love that you just shared is you talked about a process of clarification. And I think that's the element that is missing in all partnerships, all friendships, all romantic relationships, and all business relationships. Is party A thinks they know what Party B's priorities are. And then huge fights erupt because neither party communicates. But by taking the initiative, that is absolutely paramount to being indispensable, is going through a process of clarification. And I think that is the thing that your boss can really trust you to run things when you're out, can trust that you're going to get this stuff done. And it goes back to your very first point of if you can't do something, you begin to clarify, okay, I have a deadline for this Friday, I have a deadline for tomorrow, and I have a deadline for late Thursday. Let's talk about if this, then that. And I think so many of us, even when it comes to timing for things, if we're running late for a meeting, or God forbid for an interview, some of us, stick our head in the sand like an ostrich and we show up to the meeting and we don't even acknowledge we're late. Or we're like, oh, I'm already running late, so why not be really late? And one of my favorite techniques that I learned years ago that really allows people to be able to count on you is whether it's a meeting or a deadline, the moment that you know you're not going to make it, for whatever reason, that moment, it could be 5 minutes, it could be 5 days before, you immediately communicate that to whoever the person in charge is. And that is how you become somebody who is count-onable, somebody who others can count on, because you're constantly communicating with them. And all of us would rather be over-communicated to than under. It was a silly thing in the middle of all of this COVID. I have a friend and a mentor, Lee, who leads these incredible Zoom classes every Saturday for yoga. And I had a panel halfway through her class. So I texted her and I said, Lee, love the class. I've missed it. I'll be here until 6:30, but then I have to hop off because I have another panel. She immediately addressed it. She said, oh, that made such a big difference. Thank you for telling me that. Because, you know, our minds go off in a million things, even if it's something where the other person is not your boss. She wasn't my boss. I was paying to be there, but it made a difference in her world for me to communicate that so she could know what she could count on me for.
Yeah, exactly. It's alignment. Structured communication, clarity of purpose and intention, clarity of expectations is what alignment is all about. And to your point, clarifying expectations is one of the most important things you can do. So it's not just with your boss and with the people who report to you and with your lateral colleagues. Anytime somebody asks you, you know, many people, they jump to yes or no. But when somebody asks you something, the first thing you should do is tune into the ask. You get in the habit of talking to the ask, asking questions of the ask. I call it doing an intake memo. But it's a way to respect other people's needs. It's a way to show respect for the request. By the way, it also puts you in a position, if you haven't yet built the reputation for making good decisions, in the moment, it gives you a lot more power in the moment to say no, if no is the right answer, because you know, as you start to ask questions, well, let me understand exactly what is it you need? When do you need it? How do you need it? Let me make sure I understand. Here's where I intersect with that need. The more you tune into the need and the request itself, for one thing, you can sometimes send somebody back to the drawing board to clarify their need. Sometimes they don't really understand what you do or how you do it. So it's a way to help them understand how to make better use of whatever it is you do, your specialty. It might help you help them too. So you always should be trying to help people help you and help them help you help them.
Say that 5 times fast, Bruce.
You help me, help you, help me, help you, help me, help you.
I just got dizzy. That was brilliant. But it's good. It's a very good point. You're helping everybody. Communication is helpful. I mean, I think that's what it really comes down to. Are there other suggestions that you have, Bruce? I know we've focused a lot on the yeses and the nos and communicating and clarifying. What other tips or takeaways would you like our listeners to reflect upon about ways they might be able to embrace being indispensable in whatever it is they do?
Well, the first thing I always tell people is it's very easy to focus on what you need and want from others. But the starting point of being one of those indispensable go-to people is having a true service mindset and a spirit of service. So if you approach every relationship in terms of what you have to offer, not what you need or want, if what you really want is to be valuable, then be valuable. So that means try to add value in every interaction. So when somebody comes and asks you, you want to help them fine-tune their ask. If you give them a no, you want it to be a good no. If you give them a yes, you want it to be a good yes. And what you're really trying to do is add value. So people talk about using influence. I don't know how you use influence without losing influence. If you try to use influence, you're trying to get someone to do something for you, right? Mm-hmm. So every time you try to use influence, you lose influence. What influence is when you conduct yourself in such a way that other people want to do things for you. Other people want you to want to do things for them. They want to make good use of your time. They want you to be more powerful. My influence lives in your brain, right? Your influence lives in my brain. So you don't use influence. You build influence by serving others. And if you have a true spirit of service, you know you can't do everything for everyone. By the way, everyone knows that. Right. If you position yourself as trying to do everything for everyone, you try to be that superhero, you're going to burn out, right? So even if you're super valuable for some period of time, you're not going to last the marathon. Life is a marathon. Careers are a marathon. Influence and being indispensable is a marathon. Building a reputation is a marathon. So you got to play the longer game. But remember, you play the long game one moment at a time. So it starts with a spirit of service. It means trying to add value in every interaction. In a workplace, that means you got to have a vertical anchor before you deal with other people. You got to try to show that you make good decisions and do make good decisions, and then know what you want to be known for. You got to have a specialty, right? So I tell everyone, professionalize what you do. That doesn't mean you get to only work in your area of passion and strength. It means whatever it is you got to do a lot, get good at it. And then once you're good at it, you want to be known for it. And if you got to do something new, right, remember that all that stuff that's not your job, those are opportunities to expand your repertoire. So what I tell people is, there's a reason they pay you, because this isn't stuff you would do, for kicks. Right. If you were doing this for fun, there'd be a line outside the door and somebody would be selling tickets. Right. So the reason they pay you is because it's stuff they need to get done. And it's, get good at whatever you have to do and then be known for what you're good at. And when new stuff comes up, take the time to get good at that and add it to your repertoire. Those are some of the my advice is take a walk every day and eat your vegetables. But most people don't do it,
Yeah, I think that's great advice regardless, by the way. Taking a walk and eating vegetables will serve us all well and I think make us better people, hopefully.
It's back to fundamentals. Look, what you want to be indispensable, focus on the fundamentals.
And the important point that you also brought up there, Bruce, is that the more that you exercise that muscle of accountability, of influence, of being countable, the greater your salary becomes, the greater your opportunities become. And when you become the expert, you begin to have teams below you. And then that's where you can delegate all the stuff that you don't want to do anymore. But it does take time and energy. One of my favorite old cliche quotes is the iceberg quote, where it shows you on those, motivational posters, that success, and it shows you like the little tip of the iceberg that's kind of hanging out above the water, and then all the stuff that's below it. As you look at the Steve Jobs or the Elon Musk or whoever it might have been in the world, Jeff Bezos, and you think that boom, it just happened. I have a friend of mine who I've actually had on the show years ago, amazing entrepreneur. She just invented her third product. With everything going on with COVID, with her young daughter at home, she's literally in her garage in California with no air conditioning. And because her distributors had issues, she's putting the stuff in the packaging herself, because that's what you do. You do that up until a certain point so that she and her customers know that they can count on her to deliver whatever the product is. irrespective of any distribution issues you might have. I mean, that's the next level that you take it to, is no matter who you are, treat everything as if it's your own business. Imagine if it were your own business, or as one of my teachers once said to me, if 7 billion people saw you doing whatever it was, would you feel proud of it? Do you feel proud of how you live your day? At the end of every day, look back. I love to set intentions. Maybe start with 10 intentions or 5 and see if you can fulfill on those. I typically set about 15 a day, and I'd say, you know, in a good day, I achieve about 13 out of the 15. You're not perfect, but you're striving every day to be a little bit more countable, not only to others, but to yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I like your term countable. In many ways, that's what it's all about. Do people, you know, I think indispensable is in the eye of the beholder, right? Do who are the people who go to you when met on time, on spec, in ways that are going to build up the relationship and not tear it down? And you know, look, you say that at some point you get to a point where you can delegate. What I always tell people is, it doesn't matter to me how big a shot you are. You know, when somebody comes to you and says, hey, somebody's got to take the garbage out, right? That's the kind of thing that, well, it's not my job, right? Well, no, but somebody's got to do it. And the reason you do that is because you don't want to be a jerk. Right. And then there's other stuff that, like, oh, well, hey, can you do this? That's not my job. What you really mean is, that's not my specialty. I don't really know how to do that. Okay. Well, that's actually important candor. Like, that's not my specialty. So I would have to take a bunch of time to learn how to do that. But what it is you're say you want to be able to delegate to other people, I think one of the most valuable things you can do, one of the best ways to add value, is build up other people, give other people a chance to be valuable, teach them some of your tricks. So building up other people and making them more valuable, that's good for the organization. It's good for you. It's good for them. People remember the folks who take the time to build them up. How about if you have something that you need from someone else? Well, how do I get my needs met? Well, step one, think about what you have to offer the other person. You're going to give that person a chance to add value. You're going to give that person a chance to do something valuable and prove his or her value. And one of the things you can do is go to that person and be a great customer. It's not just here's what I need, but how can I help you help me? So be really good at being a customer. That's what you can do, even when it's your need that's at stake. Service doesn't mean being a saint. Service doesn't mean being selfless. If you take a service mindset, if you add value in everything you do, right, that makes you valuable. Right, you benefit from that. Everything goes better for everyone, including you.
Yeah, it's about win-wins. I love what you said. And to be clear, when we talk about delegation, I think that as a leader in any organization, we should all be willing to do every job. But to your point, it's wonderful to be able to share and to be able to uplift and support people and pay it forward and know that we're all going to be constantly evolving and growing. And one of my favorite questions that you can ask your team members, your significant others, is what can you count on me for? And what can't you count on me for? And it's a really great way, not in a good or a bad, there's nothing judgmental about it. It's something to just observe. Are there things, like one of the greatest compliments you can receive is when somebody says, I can count on you for anything, anything. I mean, that's something that we can all strive towards. Whether it is taking out the trash or running a multi-million dollar company, I can count on you for anything. And perhaps that's the gold standard of what you would call being indispensable.
Yeah. I mean, look, delegation is just another word for empowerment. It's real empowerment. Real empowerment is setting somebody up for success, giving them the power to add value. So I think delegation is a way to build people up and give them a chance to add value. Absolutely. And I think you're right. That's the gold standard for being indispensable.
Well, thank you so much, Bruce. You've been such a delight to have on. I know it's been a wonderful, enlightening conversation for me, and I'm sure our listeners have gotten a lot out of it. Are there any takeaways or last thoughts you'd love to leave our listeners and viewers with today?
Yeah. Anytime you have a chance to collaborate with someone, whether you're the one making the ask or you're the one saying, yes, let's make a plan and get this done for you. And when afterwards, you should always do what I call an after action review. I borrow that term from the United States Armed Forces. So follow up, have a good follow up process, follow up any collaboration, any action with a good after action review, and take the time to be grateful and celebrate and recognize success and thank people in a big way. And then look at what could have gone better and don't point fingers and blame, but say, hey, let's talk about how to improve, and then look around the corner and plan the next collaboration. So follow up, follow up, follow up. That's another way to add value.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite techniques that my business coach taught me years ago was what I loved was X. What I would love to see more of is why. And it's just a great way to kind of give people positive feedback. And I totally agree. Follow up. So many people go to networking events, meetings, even on the show, something like this. And then you have one touch point and you never tell anybody like, hey, thank you. I appreciate this. This was great. And it's that follow up, I think, is just another layer of what has you be somebody who's countable.
Absolutely. Countable. I'm going to quote you.
Yeah, take it, run with it. I'm sure I picked it up somewhere myself. So I just pay it forward and just seemed appropriate for this conversation. So great. Tell people, Bruce, where can they find the books, find out about working with you?
Yeah, so it's easy to find us. We're just at rainmakerthinking.com. And my email is bruce.t@rainmakerthinking.com. I respond to a lot of emails. But the book is, it's Harvard Business Review Press. So it's available wherever books are sold.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Bruce. It's been such a pleasure having you on today. And thank you again to all of our listeners and viewers out there who joined us for today's show. It's always such a pleasure to have you here with us. We create this content for you about living a fulfilled life, finding your passion, your purpose, whatever that looks like, and bringing you thought leaders and wise people, much like Bruce, who can share wisdom that will help us all to be the best version of ourselves. Do remember to everybody out there, too, if you missed any portion of this, you can also find the Zoom version of this interview on LA Talk Radio's Facebook page, which will be available immediately following the show, and rewind and watch it as quickly as you'd like. You can also go to iTunes under Get Yourself the Job. You can subscribe. You can leave us any comments or feedback. And you can also find our Get Yourself the Job page on Facebook or find us on latalkradio.com. And I do invite you to check out, there's been a very fun series. It's been a passion project of mine that I've been able to collaborate with Deepak Chopra and Don Hoffman on. And we've done 9 episodes in a 10-part series called Conversations at the Intersection of Cutting Edge Science and Spirituality. So you can either go to awaketvnetwork.live for that, or if you Google Deepak Chopra and my name, it'll pull up as well. So thank you so much, and wishing everybody a wonderful rest of your week.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.